All right, get ready, because today we're going to be diving into something that is really fascinating. We are going to be talking about Bible translation.
Sounds good.
Now, you might be thinking, translation? Really? But trust me, this is anything but dry. We're going to be zeroing in on those little phrases with of that pop up all over the Bible, like love of God, city of David. They seem simple enough, but trust me, there's way more to them than meets the eye.
I agree.
And to guide us through this exploration, we're turning to a lecture by Dr. George Payton,
Looking
who is
good.
a leading expert in Bible translation.
Also.
And right off the bat, he busts a myth.
Okay.
These phrases, they're not always about possession.
That's right.
That's right. He uses this great example, the tail of the dog. Clearly, the dog doesn't own its tail in the sense of like having bought it or something. It's more about a part-whole relationship.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And he goes on to illustrate this with other examples like bucket of water or song of Miriam. These phrases are highlighting a relationship between the nouns that goes beyond simple ownership. You know, it's funny how often we use of to connect nouns. I bet most of us don't stop to think about all the nuances of what that little word is really doing.
That's true.
So it gets even more interesting because these genitive phrases, they can actually function in different ways depending on whether they are subjective or objective. Okay, so before we go any further, can you give us a quick breakdown of what those terms actually mean? Subjective versus objective genitives.
Okay, so a subjective genitive identifies the subject performing an action. So, for example, take the phrase the love of God. Here, God is the one doing the loving. The phrase is about God's action, God's love.
Okay, so it's pointing to the source of that love.
Now, contrast that with an objective genitive, where the noun is the recipient of the action. A good example of this is fear of dogs. In this case, the fear is directed at the dogs. They are the object of that fear.
Okay, I see. So why is this distinction so important when we're talking about the Bible?
Well, think about it. Accurately conveying the meaning of a biblical text hinges on understanding these subtleties. If we misinterpret a genitive phrase, we risk missing the author's intended meaning, which can have significant implications for our understanding of a passage.
No, that makes total sense.
Dr. Payton stresses that failing to grasp this distinction can lead to misinterpretations, especially when translating the Bible, where precision is paramount.
It makes you wonder if there are any like well-known passages where this subjective versus objective distinction is like particularly crucial.
You know, that's a great point. One example that comes to mind is from Romans 5:5, where it talks about the love of God being poured into our hearts. If we understand love of God as subjective, as God's love for us, it paints a powerful picture of God's initiative in reaching out to humanity.
That's a perfect example of how, like, a seemingly minor grammatical point can actually make a huge difference in how we understand a key theological concept.
And this is why translators have to be so careful when they encounter these genitive phrases. They need to carefully analyze the context to determine if they're dealing with a subjective or objective genitive, and then find the most accurate way to express that relationship in the target language.
And I imagine that can get even trickier when the same phrase seems like it could have multiple interpretations.
You're right. And Dr. Payton brings up a fascinating example of this: gift of the Holy Spirit versus gifts of the Holy Spirit. It seems like such a small change, just adding an adset.
But it completely changes the meaning, right?
Precisely, gift of the Holy Spirit suggests the Holy Spirit itself is the gift being given. But gifts of the Holy Spirit implies that the Holy Spirit is the giver bestowing multiple gifts.
Wow, that's a great illustration of how a tiny change can totally flip the script. It really highlights the challenges that translators face in ensuring accuracy and clarity. So how do they tackle this? What process do they go through when they come across these tricky genitive phrases? Is it they need a decoder ring for these of phrases?
And Dr. Payton actually lays out a three-step process that translators use to try to decipher these tricky genitives. The first step is to figure out the precise relationship between the nouns. Are we talking about a part-whole connection, source, location, description, or something else entirely?
So like in our earlier examples, City of David points to origin rather than ownership.
Exactly.
And Song of Miriam signals the source of the song.
Exactly. Once the relationship is clear, the translator moves to step two,
right,
which is all about determining the phrase's function in the sentence.
Yeah, okay.
Is it describing something, identifying it, explaining it, or serving some other purpose?
So it's not just about the nouns themselves, but also how they fit into the bigger picture.
Precisely. And finally, the translator needs to figure out the best way to express that meaning in the target language.
Okay.
Can they use a similar genitive phrase?
Mm-hmm.
Do they need to rephrase it for clarity?
Okay.
Maybe using verbs instead of nouns would be more natural.
So it's like solving a puzzle. Finding the most accurate and understandable way to convey the original meaning.
I like that analogy. And Dr. Payton actually shares some really insightful examples of how this plays out in real-life translations.
Oh, yeah. Let's dive into those.
Okay.
I always find that real-world examples are the best way to kind of grasp these concepts.
One example he gives is the phrase, in the days of Herod,
okay,
which pops up in the Gospel of Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Directly translating this often sounds a bit archaic to modern ears.
Yeah.
So many translators opt to rephrase it using a verb for clarity.
So something like when Herod ruled instead of in the days of Herod.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It conveys the same meaning,
but
in a way that feels more natural to contemporary readers.
That makes a lot of sense. It's all about making the text accessible without sacrificing accuracy.
Right. Another great example is City of David.
Okay.
We know David didn't literally own the city in a modern sense.
Yeah, good point.
Especially since it's mentioned in the New Testament long after David's time.
Right.
So translators often choose to express it as David's hometown or the city where David was born to emphasize the idea of origin rather than ownership.
It's fascinating how much context plays a role in kind of deciphering these phrases.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then there are cases where understanding the meaning of the individual words within the genitive is crucial.
Okay.
Dr. Payton mentions the phrase, you do not have the love of God in your hearts, from the Gospel of John. Now, this one is particularly interesting because it requires a deeper understanding of what love signifies in this specific context.
It seems like it could be interpreted in a few different ways.
Right.
Is it saying that God doesn't love them?
Yeah.
Or that they don't love God?
That's precisely the dilemma translators face.
Right.
But by taking into account the surrounding verses and Jesus' message, it becomes clear that he's accusing them of not loving God.
So a more accurate rendering might be, you do not love God in your hearts.
Exactly. It highlights the importance of going beyond the literal words and considering the intended meaning within the larger context.
It's amazing how translators have to be like detectives piecing together clues to uncover the true meaning.
I love that analogy.
It really does require a keen eye for detail
and
a deep understanding of the nuances of language.
It
makes you appreciate the work that goes into creating a faithful and understandable translation.
It really does. So what can we as readers do to become more aware of these nuances when we encounter genitive phrases in the Bible?
Well, I mean, the key is to become more active readers, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't just skim over those of phrases.
Mm-hmm.
Pause and consider what they're actually conveying.
So instead of just passively absorbing the words, we should be actively engaging with the text.
Exactly. Ask yourself, what's the relationship between these nouns? What's the author really trying to say?
Right.
What function does this phrase serve within the sentence?
It's like we have the power to unlock hidden layers of meaning.
You do.
Just by paying closer attention.
And that deeper understanding can truly enrich your interpretation and appreciation of the Bible.
Yeah, it's almost like learning a new language within a language.
It is?
Yeah. And it really opens your eyes to the incredible depth and complexity of the Bible.
Absolutely.
It's pretty amazing how something as seemingly insignificant as a little of can have such a big impact on meaning.
Right.
Dr. Payton's lecture definitely got me thinking differently about how I read the Bible.
Me too.
it makes you realize how much intentionality goes into every word choice.
Yeah.
And how even the smallest details can be significant.
For sure.
So just to kind of recap what we've learned, those of phrases in the Bible, those genitive phrases, they're way more than just about possession.
That's right.
They can signal origin, source, description, the object of an action.
Exactly.
So much more.
Yep.
And it's up to us as readers to be mindful of those nuances so we can fully grasp what the author intended to convey.
Absolutely.
It's about becoming active readers, engaging with the text on a deeper level and asking those critical questions. Don't just skim over those of phrases.
Right.
They hold a wealth of meaning.
They do. They're like little treasure chests
that's
waiting to be opened.
Well, I think we've successfully unpacked the mysteries.
I think so.
Of those tricky genitive phrases.
Oh, yeah.
This has been a fascinating deep dive.
I agree. It's amazing how much we can learn from exploring even a single grammatical construction.
And here's a final thought for you to ponder as you continue your own exploration of the Bible.
Okay.
Dr. Payton focused on biblical translation.
Right.
But how do we use genitive phrases in our everyday language?
Oh, that's interesting.
Are we always using them correctly?
Yeah.
Do our of phrases always convey what we intend them to?
That's a good question.
Pay attention to those little of phrases in your own conversations and writing.
Yeah.
You might be surprised by what you discover.
I like it.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll catch you next time for another fascinating exploration.